Saludos nuestra gente, and welcome to our fifth episode of The Latina Theory, a Spanglish podcast sin vergüenzas. I'm your host, Ariana Genis, along with my co-host,
Maria Isa.
And we are two proud Minnesotanas, a Chicana and a Boricua, proud of where we come from and where we are now. We're here to create a dialogue focused on Latina opinions regarding current events, health, politics, race, edutainment,
and a music playlist asazonado with Latino contemporary, Latino alternative, soul, hip-hop, reggae, reggaeton, cumbia, R&B, salsa, Afro-Latino, ritmos, y más.
Yo, que la que hay, el neo con el gotay con el neo.
You are now tuned
into the secreta. En verdad que está cabrón, para vivirme en un avión. Me acuerdo cuando tenía un par de tenis más que un solo pantalón. Cuando me miraba en el espejo y me preguntaba cuándo será que voy a pegarle una canción. Hasta las nenas me siguen, me piden fotos, me escuchan en la radio y me ven en la televisión. En verdad que está cabrón, pero se siente cabrón.
En verdad que está cabrón, ahora vivimos en un avión. Me acuerdo cuando tenía un par de tenis más que un solo pantalón. Que me miraba en el espejo y me preguntaba cuándo es que yo iba a pegar aunque sea una canción. Ahora las nenas me siguen, me piden fotos, me escuchan en la radio y me ven en la televisión. En verdad que está cabrón, pero se siente cabrón.
La tarjeta del banco que tenía era de los cupones. Ahora la que tengo ha visto un par de melones. Viviendo chile, como se supone. Y si se acaban los chavos, en verdad que sin cojones. Porque ya le dimos percha al pantalón. Ahora usamos Gucci, Versace y también Louis Vuitton. Por las Jordan lo que me falta son las Giuseppe. Un pote cuatro filis y disimulaba el Pepe. Ahora soy artista, orgullo pa' mi pai. Grabando con la voz más cabrona, alias Gotay. Humildemente gracias a Dios por todo. Y ahora todo el mundo que me cante el fucking coro. En verdad que está cabrón, para vivirme en un avión. Me acuerdo cuando tenía un par de tenis más que un solo pantalón. Cuando me miraba en el espejo y me preguntaba cuándo será que voy a pegarle una canción. Hasta las nenas me siguen, me piden fotos, me escuchan en la radio y me ven en la televisión. En verdad que está cabrón, pero se siente cabrón.
En verdad que está cabrón, ahora vivimos en un avión. Me acuerdo cuando tenía un par de tenis más que un solo pantalón. Que me miraba en el espejo y me preguntaba cuándo es que yo iba a pegar aunque sea una canción. Ahora las nenas me siguen, me piden fotos, me escuchan en la radio y me ven en la televisión. En verdad que está cabrón, pero se siente cabrón.
En verdad que está cabrón, no tenía ni un refresco. Tengo más hoy día de lo que yo me merezco. Gracias a Dios hasta tengo una casa a nombre mío. Antes lo que yo estaba era pendiente al lío. Grabé con mi artista favorito el viejo. Ahora solamente me hace falta el viejo. ¿Qué más en esta vida puedo pedir? Solamente tengo que decir.
En verdad que está cabrón, ahora vivirme en un avión. Me acuerdo cuando tenía un par de tenis más que un solo pantalón. Cuando me miraba en el espejo y me preguntaba cuándo será que voy a pegarle una canción. Ahora las nenas me siguen, me piden fotos, me escuchan en la radio y me ven en la televisión. En verdad que está cabrón, pero se siente cabrón.
En verdad que está cabrón, ahora vivimos en un avión. Me acuerdo cuando tenía un par de tenis más que un solo pantalón. Que me miraba en el espejo y me preguntaba cuándo es que iba a pegar aunque sea una canción. Ahora las nenas me siguen, me piden fotos, me escuchan en la radio y me ven en la televisión. En verdad que está cabrón, pero se siente cabrón.
En verdad que está cabrón, que siempre sale un copión a carjaquear de la canción. Nere, el alma secreta, magnífico. Dios me dio el don para meterle cabrón. See you later. Todos los haters, los veo luego, te veo Lola.
Yo soy la fama star, Authentic Music, Otay, Top Dollar, Electric.
Welcome to the fifth episode of Latina Theory, and we've got something a little different this episode, and it's our first time where we have the ritmo, el ritmo cambia. It's where we get to bring in a guest for our episode, and not only is our guest a comadre, a compañera, comrade, but also a strong activist and leader in our local Latino community, but nationally abroad as well. She be doing her thing. And she's a poet. She's finishing up her doctorate, and she teaches at the U of M in Chicano Latino Studies Department. She also just started a new candle line called Fierda Calo Velas. Yeah, Fierda Calo Velas. And with our Ritmo Cambia today, we are excited. Let's welcome, give a strong welcoming to La Única, Jessica Lopez Lyman. And how's it going, Jessica?
It's going great. Thanks so much for having me on your podcast. I've been listening to all of them and loving all of them. I'm going to make my students listen to them.
All right.
So I'm glad to be here.
Right on.
So happy to have you.
And we're happy to be able to, you know, switch the format with a different rhythm. We have our Plato del Día starting our podcast conversation today because we just finished having our brunch here.
Yes, we did.
Switching it up a little different. We're out of the studios in Midway and we're here over Southside, Minneapolis, Powder on Hood.
Woo-hoo.
At the residency of Ariana and her bae, who fix up a brunch, a Sin Fronteras brunch.
Yes, actually, I'm going to let Jessica talk to us about Sin Fronteras, and then I'll highlight the wonderful meal we cooked together today.
Awesome. So I was in charge of bringing some salsa. We made it from Sin Fronteras. It's a farm that is started by Eduardo Rivera and his partner, Sammy Ardito Rivera. They rent land out in Stillwater, and the farm is really talking about how we continue to learn about the harvest in intergenerational ways. So Eduardo talks about learning it from his elders and now instilling it to their young daughter, but really thinking about how we can have agricultural as a way to create social change. So they did, for the very first time ever, I think in the history of Minnesota, a CSA that was dedicated to Latino cuisine.
Wonderful.
So my partner and I have been having it all summer. Every week we go pick up a box full of cilantro, cebolla, you know, they grow everything except limon and aguacate, we say, just because they can't here. So we had salsa made from them, tomatillos and tomate.
Delicious.
And then we just had, you know, your classic Mexican breakfast with some, you know, huevitos con verduras, frijoles negros, tortilla, salsa. And then, you know, our friend Maria Isa, the Boricua, had to come in and bring.
I had to bring in the bendición of the cafecito. Straight sent from Puerto Rico, Yacono. We had the fresh beans brewed from Yacono. Shout out to my brother Carlitos in Miramar for sending me 2 pounds of beans so I can have my little Puerto Rico here. In Minnesota.
Yeah, we fell in love immediately.
Yeah, we're all geeked. We're all geeked.
We made 2 pots. Now we're all like, yes, let's do this. Let's talk.
I'm over here doing bomba solos in the living room.
Latina sin vergüenza.
She said,
yo lo tengo. ¿Qué tú quieres? Yo.
I'm loving the frame, the way she be calling my name. Nobody can do it the same. Nah. She ain't asking for change, I just give what she wants. Never question the fame. Never question the fame, I just pick what we left off, the others is lame. Rekindle the flame, she telling me, Poppy, keep blowing my brains. I'm holding her thighs, most like I'm taking a high. The ghetto falsetto plus 5, feel so alive. Dripping and fixing in mind, her river will never run dry. Saying she love how it feels, wrapping her legs all around me with heels. Standing deliver like no other nigga. She shakes and quivers like X with no pill. Aquí llego el nene, a ver qué sucede.
Mamita, que quiere, te siento velándome como lo quiere. Cien de mujeres hasta este loco, pero me entretienen, persiguen y vienen, prefieren papeles y viajes que vuelen, él no mantiene. Dropping your panties like Fred, the way I be spinning your head, the rhythm is fed, these niggas got bread, but most got no stroke in the bed. Tells me she wants me to stay, papi, I love you like this every day. I got what you need, I don't want you to leave, so let's blow on some trees and right after she'll say,
boy, give me some more, give me some more,
boy,
give me some more, give me some more,
boy,
give me some more.
De la prendida candela amarilla, aleres bombilla, maruca tranquila, fumando that killer, always stay pillar, mi crema da buena, family in the villa, vineyards and apples, cigars from Havana, Miss Copacabana, Miss Blunts and Bandanas, Isa Tropicana, I find your all-star, yo soy la fama, and you want more, roses en la cama, soy la reina, prom boy, ya nena con la lengua, alfa, omega, la lotería, pega, pega, you hit la mega, el quiere mate la P de Vega, Lola de tío con su bandera, con su muchacho y con el machete, baby, come with it y dale más fuerte.
Give me some more. Give me some more. Give me some more. Give me some more. Give me some more.
Don't think making no excuses. Cut the lights up, apaga la luz. Cause you're coming home with me. Drunk off me. Smoking buds with me. Making love with me. With me. Lo tengo por la noche. Tengo por el día. Tiene el amor que abrí.
Let's kick it off with our flashback of the week, flashback in Latino history. And I just want to make note before we would start getting into it that the Boricua in the group brought this up, okay? to be clear. And it's about how many Boricuas have played Mexicans in Latino history here in the U.S.?
Too many. I mean,
Ecumi. well, we got onto this. Obviously, we have. I was told today over brunch that Ariana introduced Jeremiah to his first screening of Mi Familia, the 1995 film of Mi Familia, directed by Gregory Nava, where we have about, I want to say, four.
Everybody.
Boricuas playing
Mexicans.
I mean, we've got, we've got J-Lo's first movie. We have Isai Morales. We have Jimmy Smits. We also have the half Boricua, half Italiano, Michael DeLorenzo. Shout out to Michael. Hi, Michael. and, you know, and it's came a long way, and it's opening the doors, obviously, to Latinos in Hollywood. Not to say that there are only Boricuas playing, but you had, you know, Edward James Olmos in that film, who and Gregory Nava are both Mexican, and very supportive of making sure that all brown are being recognized. And I mean, I'm heading to go to Hollywood this week for the premiere of Strike One in Hollywood, celebrating Latinos in Hollywood at the Cultural Center, the Cultural Center there to Latino Heritage Month. We're not saying Hispanic anymore. We're doing the Latino Heritage. And red carpet with Trejo and Johnny Ortiz and Alma Martinez and
a bunch of Chicanos.
A bunch of Chicanos. Or, you know, Johnny Ortiz is Guatemalan and Mexican. He's born from a Guatemaltecas. So, and it's an honor, but I've always been going through this. Yeah, the Boricuas think that I'm Mexican, and the Mexicans know I'm Boricua.
That's really true. And I think, I mean, it's not only, right, so we're talking about my family as one of them. Then there is also Selena, which casted J-Lo, and that also became a big controversy, right? Because everyone wanted a Chicana, and Selena is and will continue to be, like, a legend in the Latino community for her music and what she represented. So I'm trying to think about other films that we could highlight where this happened. And I think you bring up a good point, Maria Isa, about how we need to be supporting all Latinos and all brown folks need to be represented in Hollywood, period, and through independent films in our own mediums, in whatever way, but also the need to have Chicanos and Mexicans playing the roles that they're supposed to be is also a thing.
Absolutely.
Right?
I mean, America Ferrera, she's Hondureña. How many roles has she played when she's a Chicana?
Absolutely.
You know, so, and...
But at the end of the day, you know, there's this report that came out in 2014 called the Latino Media Gap. And one of the things that the report said is that even though you have an increase of what they call Hispanic buying power or Hispanic marketing, you have an increase of the Latino population, you actually have a decrease in Latinos being represented in the media, particularly mainstream Hollywood films. And so regardless, yeah, we can joke like, how come a Chicana can never play a Chicana? Shout out to Alma Martinez, who's been doing it forever.
Right.
Yeah. Too, right?
My ama.
Your ama in the movie. But at the same time, because of those statistics, and we know what's happening within our mainstream media, anytime Latinos actually play roles that are positive, that are uplifting our communities, then we really have to support that.
Exactly.
I appreciate the support that you ladies give. It's strong. It makes me put a get my Santa Barbara, my chango sort out when I'm out there being like, hey, man, we're all brown, you know, and Trejo says it best. He's like, we're all brown. You got to remember that there's the beast. We're in the belly of the beast in this industry, and all they really care about is green. And we have to utilize our green for the brown, whatever green that may be. Okay, so going into that, I also want to bring in, you know, I'm a fan of a group that we got to check out today or this week. All three of us ladies was there.
Yes, we did.
We got to check out Ariana, highlight it.
We got to check out the one and only La Santa Cecilia, which is an amazing Grammy-winning Mexican-American band based off in Los Angeles, and they performed at the Dakota this past week. And so they play all types, it's like a fusion of all kinds of music, right? They speak in English, Spanish, and Spanglish in their music, and it ranges from like norteñas and cumbias and boleros, rancheras, and much more.
Gosh, it was so cool. My mom was singing like all the throwback jams. It's just like, oh my God, I love this. I love it. And I think that's the connection right there, you know? Our stories may be different as far as our geographic location and our indigenous, you know, rituals, but they all tie in together. And it's tying into surviving oppression continuing to preserve our oral traditions and recognizing that we rule our history.
And I think that's something that I saw very consistent in every time that they spoke between each song. I would say even more than when they performed at the Ordway, when they were here earlier in Minneapolis earlier this year. They just made a very clear point about talking about like the context of each song, about why they were talking about immigration on stage, and why they were going to talk about like state-sanctioned violence, basically. Some of these terms were not used directly by them, to be clear, but in my interpretation, those were issues that they were bringing up.
Definitely.
And we see that in their music, right? The remix of the ever-popular Strawberry Fields. And if you ever see the video, it's this cartoon of the history or the storyline of strawberries being picked, you know, by the folks in the campos, and really talking about the day laborers, the undocumented workers, the migrants who are picking our food and bringing it to the table. And what is that history? Just when you get the tres leches with the beautiful fresas on top of it, right, that has to come from somewhere.
Exactly.
And so I think that they're a really excellent group to illustrate how you can put your politics into your music and still be entertaining because we danced our asses off.
We definitely did.
I saw y'all turning around. I showed up, you know, I showed up on Puerto Rican time a little late. I had to make sure my mommy was taken care of, and it was raining. But as soon as I got there, I ran into Jess right away, and I saw you guys getting down. And it was just fun. It was fun. It was fun for us to be able to be in a room with a lot of Latinas.
Specifically. You had other artists there as well, like Anaísa Márquez, artist, social justice worker, was
Emmanuel,
also there.
You know, Ortiz.
Emmanuel Ortiz was there. Yeah. It was a great night. So it was a great presentation. They had great politics to say between each song, and then every song was just, it sounded beautiful, had a wonderful rhythm. The venue was not set up to be danced in, which I will say, should not be happening with Las Santas Cecilias being invited into a space. But we made it into a dancing arena.
And
so that's part of the reason we had a great time.
Much love for y'all for bringing that together, because they need to recognize if you're bringing our established, you know, our gente to your establishment, you need to be sensitive and inviting to what we want to do.
Change the space.
Change the space around to us. Mm-hmm. Don't make us change for your space.
Exactly.
And shout out to Marisol Hernandez, the lead singer. She's 7 months pregnant. And
she killed it.
Yes. And had us crying, laughing.
Beautiful. Her voice was like even more powerful that she has got the rhythm of Yemaya and Anansi. All up in there. She really was like La Santa Marisol.
Right.
But going into that, we want to welcome their new album coming out this February called
Buenaventura.
Buenaventura. And here's a song called, their latest song called I Won't Cry For You.
Got me figured out, I said, don't think I haven't been around, I said, don't think I ain't going nowhere, 'cause you could be surprised. Show me that you can take a stand, I said, show me that you could be a man, show me more. Stop the hugging and the kissing, 'cause in the end the goods are missing. Don't like rides that take me nowhere, I am getting old. I won't cry for you, I surely had enough, and I will fly for good.
And once again, that was La Santa Cecilia with I Won't Cry For You. And Jessica, you had one more thing to highlight about La Santa Cecilia.
Yeah, all of you love Marisol. I also want to put you up on this group that she's part of called Entre Mujeres. It includes folks like Marta Gonzalez, who is a professor at Scripps, but also part of the famous Grammy-winning band Quetzal from East L.A. The band Entre Mujeres is beautiful, all women. They perform a lot of son jarocho, bringing in a lot of indigenous spiritual work as well. So definitely check them out, Entre Mujeres.
Thank you so much, Jessica. And now we're going to be talking about our Guerreras de la Semana, hashtag Bra. Guerreras. Bra. Bra. And Maria Isa is going to be sharing her Guerrera with us.
Yes, my Guerrera is the CEO and the president of the Minneapolis Foundation, the marvelous Sandy Vargas. Shout out to Sandy Vargas. She's been doing a lot of things. I've been raised along her cafecitos and vinitos and circle with her discussions with my mother growing up. And mm-hmm. just seeing all of the barriers that they've knocked down so that we're here doing what we're doing. You know, mm-hmm. everyone has their own opinions towards everything. We try to slash out the politics. We voice our opinions as well. And Sandy's someone who voices her opinion. Mm-hmm. Obviously, a woman, a Latina, in a white man's world mm-hmm. For decades and being on top. And they're celebrating their 100 years. I'm supposed to be there this week performing. Mm-hmm. I'm going to miss the fact that I won't be able to. Shout out to Proper Tea, to Taylor is going to be showcasing their professional caliber through music and diversity. And Sandy, we love you. I can't wait to see you again. And I know that you are going to be kicking down more doors for the city of Minneapolis and funding our community for the next 100 years. So shout out to that Guerrera. And our next Guerrera is?
So our next Guerrera is the one and only Dr. Eden Torres. She is the chair of the Chicano Latino Studies Department at the University of Minnesota. And to be clear, she's also one of the main guerreras keeping that department alive. And so I'm actually going to let our wonderful guest, Jessica, who teaches in that department as well, tell us more about that.
Absolutely. So there's been a campaign for the past year to try to keep more funding to the department. But let's be clear about this, that this mm-hmm. is... This year is not the first time. The department was started in 1972. It came out of protest, literally students, community members, faculty, staff putting their bodies on the lines to get a Chicano Studies department. Similarly, that was happening all over the country. The University of Minnesota had the very first Chicano Studies department in the entire Midwest. And so over 40 years ago, the fight to keep the department still is happening. Mm-hmm. And Dr. Torres, author of Chicano Without Apology, has been very consistent in making sure that Chicano Latino students on campus get the best resources that they can possibly get. Mm. She runs this, works with a committee to put together an event called Casa Sol, where first year Latino students live together. They take a class, they go on retreat. And really what the research shows, right, is building these cohorts to help you navigate a student population of 50 plus thousand students, right? Yeah. A lot of first generation college students. Having those kind of cohorts helps build your network, helps you navigate a system which oftentimes, as we know, wasn't really set up for us.
Exactly.
And so folks like Dr. Eden Torres are constantly making sure that the department stays open, that these spaces for students continue, and also has worked throughout the years to make sure that faculty and staff have spaces where they can come together and talk about their issues being Latina or being faculty or staff of color. Mm-hmm.
Thank you so much, Jessica. And so much love y respeto for Dr. Eden Torres. Thank you so much for everything that you do and that you will continue to do, and know that we have your back.
And with that, we are going into our next song by Las Cafeteras. Shout out to Las Cafeteras. We hope to see you here in Minnesota soon. We're working and we'll tell you a little bit more about that coming up. But here's Las Cafeteras with Mujer. Soy
Latina, sí le cuento. are now tuned into the Latina Theory.
Well, going off the Jorge Ramos sample, we are. That brings us into our next segment here at the Latina Theory, and we're going into Latino news. Ariana, bring us into some Latino news.
Absolutely. So I want to take some time to talk about an article that came out several weeks ago by Raquel Richard on Latina Magazine, and it's called 10 Troubling Facts About Latinas and Mass Incarceration. And I wanted us to have a discussion around it because I think that it's absolutely amazing and important that, you know, movements like Black Lives Matter and social media in general and folks of color and women of color in social media are bringing injustices to a light in a way that hasn't been seen before, right? Mm-hmm. So, you know, from, you know, knowing the highly publicized police killings of unarmed men like Michael Brown and Eric Gardner, mm-hmm. and also the non-indictment of the murderers of these, mm-hmm. You know, Black men and what that means. Mm-hmm. But also a pattern that's happening in that we're not talking about mujeres in, you know, and police brutality and mujeres in mass incarceration and what that means. So that then I can say names like Rekia Boyd and Jesse Hernandez, and you're not going to really recognize who those women are, mm-hmm. you know, and they're women of color who are victims of police violence, right?
Yeah.
And so I think this article is so important because it, you know, sheds light on the issue of women not being discussed when we talk about, mm-hmm. you know, state-sanctioned violence in general, mm-hmm. But also how Latinas specifically are not being discussed at all. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. so I think it's important for us to be having these discussions and to, you know, call attention to it. You know, and I really hope that our other sisters in the struggle, brothers in the struggle, family in the struggle also take time to start highlighting this issue. Mm-hmm. And so I'm just going to actually read the facts that the article puts up.
Please do. I've been waiting for this throughout the whole segment.
Yes. And then, you know, all three of us as compañeras can quickly discuss it.
Does that sound good? Sounds good.
All right. So first fact, Latinas make up one of the fastest growing groups in prison. In fact, the number of women behind bars is increasing at almost double the rate for men. And Latinas alone are 69% more likely to be incarcerated than white women. So fact two, a majority of these mujeres are locked up for nonviolent drug offenses. Yeah. So the war on drugs has been waged on communities of color, with Black and Latinas experiencing much higher arrest rates, though they are neither used nor sell drugs more than whites. Fact three, beyond arrest, Latinas are more likely to be disadvantaged in terms of the decision to incarcerate. So Latinas and Blacks are more likely to be jailed for similar crimes as whites. Mm-hmm. Fact four, even more, the sentencing of Latinas is often harsher than their white counterparts. So in fact, on the state level, Latinas are 26.6% more likely to have a harsher sentence for a similar crime than whites. At the federal level, that number leaps to 47.6%.
Damn.
Fact five, Latinas are also less likely to receive a reduction in sentences for providing substantial assistance. So to the prosecution. So a 1997 study found that whites who provided the assistance received an average of 23% reduction. Mm-hmm. For Latinos, the average was 14%. Mm-hmm. Fact six, the high incarceration rates rip families apart, and this has a particular effect on Latinas. According to the Center for American Progress, 65% of women compared to 44% of men behind bars are mothers to minors. Mm. Latinas are more likely than white women to raise their children alone, meaning that kids are being taken from the only caretaker they know. Mm. As much as 38% of children will not see their mothers even once while detained.
Hmm.
And let's just take into account that we don't know exactly how detention centers play into this.
Mm-hmm.
So fact seven, on children, young Latinas are one of the fastest growing segments of the juvenile justice system. A new study found that 47 of every 100,000 Latina girls end up in the juvenile detention centers, behind natives, which are 179, and African American girls. Fact eight, the sexual abuse to prison pipeline means that many Latinas are criminalized for being sexually and physically abused.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, most girls incarcerated in Florida and California, two states that have some of the country's largest Latino populations are victims of violence. Fact 9, for Latinas, young and old, abuse continues behind bars. While research has indicated that sexual abuse by guards is widespread, with imprisoned women subjected to rape, abusive pat and strip searches, verbal harassment, sexual threats, and more, scholar Kim Sheyo Buchnan notes that women of color are sexually assaulted more frequently than white inmates. However, because of racial discrimination and barriers, these women are less likely to report these acts of violence. And fact 10, trans Latinas experience high rates of abuse from both guards and inmates. Mm-hmm. And mi compañera Jessica is going to be highlighting more on that, but just real quick, trans Latinas have long discussed the police they harassment they encounter for walking while trans. However, when locked away in the U.S. prison system, these mujeres experience abuse that compounds race, ethnicity, gender, and transphobia. A 2012 report found that 30% of jail trans Latinas experience verbal assault by other inmates. Furthermore, 11% are physically assaulted and 10% are sexually assaulted. And these are our sisters who are reporting. So the report also discovered that guards responded negatively or did nothing at all when these abuses were reported.
Wow. I mean, we know what's happening.
Mm-hmm.
Those are even more facts that if we didn't, we're unclear of. However, where do you see the opportunities for us to be more engaged? You know, ladies, how can we find some ways to not only just read the statistics, like mm-hmm. obviously what we're doing,
yep.
showcasing mm-hmm. it off and promoting it through media, but also being able to go, we need to set up like a forum to be able to get into these institutions.
Mm-hmm.
And to hear those stories, to write those stories about the women that are incarcerated. Mm-hmm. I remember visiting women in my family who were incarcerated
yeah.
due to a lot of those, you know, bullet points that you just read off mm-hmm. growing up, the mothers of my cousins.
Yeah.
And to see that even when they do come out, there's no tratamiento mm-hmm. yeah. for those wounds.
Apoyo.
There's just scars mm-hmm. or wounds that keep opening up and making it worse for us to be able to keep moving pa'lante.
Mm-hmm.
And so I feel like, I mean, obviously there's so much work to be done in like every sector, but mm-hmm. we really need to focus on our mujeres and their health and their physical and mental treatment
yeah.
when they do get out of these jails and while they're inside.
Exactly.
We watch mm-hmm. Orange is the New Black and we kind of get the comic view of it all, yeah. but in the end it isn't funny and it is happening.
Exactly.
There are women that are being sexually molested and sexually abused.
Exactly.
And there's yeah. also women who have children who fall into the same pattern.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly.
Yeah, I think, you know, first and foremost, when anytime we're talking about the prison industrial complex, we have to talk about it in the history and context of slavery and settler colonialism. And exactly. by no means by us talking about Latinas, particularly, I want to highlight a little bit more later about trans Latinas, by no means are we saying that that's in opposition to Black Lives Matter
exactly.
at all, right? We understand and we are very aware that there's anti-Black sentiments in our communities and that that's something that we simultaneously have to work against.
Mm-hmm.
And so if anything, this kind of conversation is to highlight not an oppression Olympics by any means,
mm-hmm.
but to talk about the ways that we can work together in solidarity. And so I think in answer to your question, Maria Isa, one of the things that I think we need to do more of is really looking at how these different social movements are occurring.
Mm-hmm.
But as Latinas, trans Latinas is the example I want to share, that we need to build movements across identity politics and across different social movements. So,
yeah.
for example, you see folks at the Transgender Law Center in California
mm-hmm.
and the Trans Latina organization in LA. Shout out to Bambi Salcedo, trans Latina activist Luisa Noyola, also at the Transgender Law Center, right? These mujeres are talking about the basic human rights of trans Latinas to exist in this world. And they've done some really great actions targeting the Santa Ana prison system where a lot of trans mm-hmm. Latinas are detained because they're undocumented. And we get a little bit of in this report that you just read, Ari, but the amount of violence, particularly
yeah.
sexual abuse
mm-hmm.
that these women receive in their previous countries of origin and then come to the United States seeking asylum right? The violence that gets reinscribed on them once they're here. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so how can the immigrants' right movement work in solidarity with trans Latina movement to really make something happen, right? Mm-hmm. When you have the marches in 2006, when they're talking about immigrants' rights, are they also including trans Latinas in this? Mm-hmm. And I think that's similar to what the Black Lives Matters movement is dealing with right now, where trans Black women are saying, hey, women, trans women of color are experiencing violence at higher rates than any other population, right? Unless they're liberated, none of us get free. Mm-hmm. And then the other movement that I think we see happening, which sometimes intend to be a little white, is this healing justice movement. And so the healing justice movement is about self-care, but it's about more than that. It's about understanding how trauma gets held in our bodies and trauma gets passed down generationally. Mm-hmm. And so when you're talking, Maria Isa, you know, about family members being incarcerated and what happens to their children, mm-hmm. there are new scientific studies that are coming out that saying that poverty, trauma gets actually held in our cellular makeup, mm-hmm. and that can potentially mm-hmm. get passed down. And so healing justice movements are asking, how can we unlearn colonialism? How can we take time for ourselves to do the work, and knowing that healing doesn't mean that we become perfect, right? Exactly. But that healing is a process, mm-hmm. and to take trauma out of our bodies is, you know, can be years of work. But mm-hmm. that movement, if that starts being more accessible to folks of color, particularly Latinas, trans Latinas, I think that that's another movement where we can see change happen.
Mm-hmm. Well said. We want to hear more from our community of listeners. If you have any of your opinions, ideas of that we may not know of, exactly. or where we can do mm-hmm. some outreach work at, please email us at latinatheory@gmail.com or get us at Twitter at latinatheory, #sinvergüenzas. We want to hear from those that have experienced it, are mm-hmm. experiencing it, or Hopefully. Just want to be a part of a collective movement that want to see and make a difference. With that, we're going into our next song, Dicen Que Soy by La India.
Saberlo.
to the Latina Theory with Maria Isa and Adriana Heria. Latina sin vergüenza.
Our hashtag FTP de la semana.
And
thank you very much, Maria Isa. And so our FTP, I'm just going to be honest, every time we have this conversation, we struggle to identify just one. Okay? To be clear.
There's many.
There are many. But this week, we let our wonderful compañera pick one. And so she's going to be talking about, and he's actually local, everyone, so feel free to look him up and learn more about his very complicated oppressive politics.
Google him.
Yeah. So we're putting hashtag FTP this week is Myron Orfield, professor of law at the University of Minnesota. He also spent some time as a legislator, DFLer. And he's coming against the critiques of the Metropolitan Council, particularly looking at housing. And so what Dr. Orfield, Professor Orfield has been saying is that rather than build more affordable housing, which he considers concentrated levels of poverty in St. Paul or Minneapolis, that we actually need to spread affordable housing out throughout the entire network of the metropolitan area. Mm-hmm. And he has come under heavy critique, particularly by Professor Edward Goetz, also at the University of Minnesota, doing urban planning. And this whole idea of displacing people's homes is a key component of gentrification. Mm-hmm. And so on the surface, somebody might say, oh, well, yeah, we don't want to put all these poor people together. But actually, this becomes an ethical issue when you think about it. Moving people to the suburbs is not going to make any structural change. No. And that's where Orfield is becoming under attack. Moving someone's home further away from their job means that they're not going to be around their kids. Exactly. We already know that gente is having to work 2-3 jobs just to pay the rent in a growing economy where rent is extremely high.
Right.
We also know one of Orfield's points is that you can move poor people of color out to the suburbs and they'll get better resources because they have more parks, they have more schools, they have better resources at the schools. Actually, the research shows in education that if you isolate students of color and put them in environments where they're one of the only few people of color, I know Maria Isa, you and I have rapped about this before, being one of like the only Latinas,
in the
only
class.
Students of color in the class in your grade,
school.
Right?
Like
the amount of isolation you face, the number of racial microaggressions creates what education scholars call racial battle fatigue, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so on many different levels, Orfield really is not getting what people of color, poor people, working class people in Minnesota need. And the last point I want to say to him about this is that really it should be the people themselves that are deciding what happens to their homes and deciding where they should live, right? It should not be somebody outside of the community dictating what will happen to the community.
Exactly.
And I think that feeling the entitlement to be able to tell those poor people what they should be doing and what's better for them already gives you, at least gives me, a sense that there's something funky going on. Right?
Absolutely.
The fact that you're not talking to the people that are living in these neighborhoods and that I will actually, I think I know all three of us will say that they know best what is going to work for them.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And I think that almost... I'm just thinking about my time in Namibia and South Africa and learning about, you know, apartheid and, you know, seeing the townships and how the city was constructed and, you know, Black folks were pushed outside and they were only to come in to work for white folks.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, like, I'm not saying that those are the claims being made, but I can't deny that that's what comes into my mind, that it's going to lead to that type of pattern.
Absolutely.
Right?
Absolutely.
It's just wicked. It's plain wicked. So yeah, FTP.
Major FTP.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, we keep throwing the word gentrification around. It's become a buzzword. It becomes something that people can use in conversation with us without really unpacking it ever. And so if you're interested in learning more about gentrification, but also solutions to gentrification, not just talking about, oh, we have less affordable housing or, oh, people are getting displaced from their homes. What do we do about it? What is the role and responsibility of the artist? What is the responsibility of the renter? How can we work with our policymakers to make sure that urban developers don't come in and create this placemaking, creative economy in which we actually don't exist and not just don't even have a voice at the table, but we're not really constructing the policies that shape how and where we're going to live. Mm-hmm. So there's going to be a conversation. City Council member Alondra Cano from the Ward 9 always puts on this thing monthly called Café con Alondra. She picks different topics. Sometimes she's talked about the potential new soccer stadium. Other times she's talked about sex work. This time, September 30th at 5:30 at Pillsbury House, which is on the corner of Chicago and 35th, Pillsbury House, 5:30. There'll be a talk about gentrification. I'll be on the panel. Sean Webster, co-owner of Ancestry Books, along with his wife, Brenna Wong. Sean Webster will be on the panel. And a few other folks, I think Neeraj from Cura at the University of Minnesota. They really look at policies that bridge the community and academic scholarship together. We'll all be on the panel talking about this issue of gentrification, but also talking about ways that we can make change.
Wonderful. Thank you so much for sharing that with us, Jessica.
Thank you. Shout out to Puya in Puerto Rico, featuring Tito Auger, Tego Calderon, Mimi Maura, y El Topo. This is Puya's song, La Muralla.
You are now tuned into the Latina Theory with Maria Isa and Adriana Hedias.
And here is where we get into the politics y la opinión de la gente. Jessica, bring us into our next político discussion and opinión.
Well, you know, we're a few months away from Día de los Muertos, but of course for me that means cultural appropriation. I think folks saw it last year, but I was going to get some materials to make these candles I've been doing. Shout out to Miguel Vargas for the Cumbia Salsa thing that he put together also with Filiberto. So I was preparing for that, and I walked into Michael's, the craft store, and there were just like aisles of different figurines, calaveras, cositas for Día de los Muertos, all made in China. You know, the quality of product, definitely not the same as that you can buy in Mexico from, you know, the artisans there that have been learning this trade through generations.
Exactly.
And so it really started thinking, made me thinking about, wow, you know, we really have quote unquote made it as a Latino population when you start having them market these type of materials to us in a way. I remember last year they had a bar, like a drinking bar that was an altar, and you could put like your margarita on top and your taco on the side. You know, altars are sacred,
right?
Exactly.
You put your, you know, it's a celebration of those that have passed,
right?
And here it's a place for your margarita, apparently.
They're not our relics,
right?
Those aren't our relics,
exactly. And so, this time of year, also with Halloween coming up and the costumes that folks wear, I think it's a really good opportunity to talk about cultural appropriation,
Exactly. And I think it's a, and on that same note, like cultural appropriation being like, you should not be dressing like Frida Kahlo. You should not be dressing like folks of color, period, if you are a white person.
I'm gonna dress up as a white person.
You know what I mean? Like what Snoop Dogg's doing? Have you seen that? No. Snoop Dogg has a white character that he plays, and it's named like Todd. And he basically plays whiteface. But anyways, that's like side note. But no, so I just think, you know, that's like a way of
dress up like spooky black for Halloween.
Just think about like the disrespect that happens when you wear a person's culture and history that's been passed on for generations as a source of entertainment for you and actually not suffer not a single consequence. Whereas us, when we actually try to do those things, there are negative consequences that happen when we try to speak our own language in spaces, when we try to bring our own rituals, rituals and practices into spaces. There's almost like a penalization of that.
Absolutely. And we know that, you know, especially folks like Chicanas and Chicanos, Boricua, folks that have grown up in the United States, sometimes you might not know about your culture. And so learning about your culture, reclaiming your culture, that's very different than somebody appropriating the culture.
Right.
And there's also a difference, I think, between cultural exchange and cultural appropriation. So if you're not Latina or Latino and you're questioning, should I be celebrating this? Should I be wearing this? I think you just got to ask yourself basic questions. Where did you learn about it? Was it a cultural exchange where you also shared, taught somebody how to Irish dance or whatever, you know, your cultural background might be, and there was an exchange, meaning that the power relationships were as equitable as they could be, you know? And the other question you can ask yourself, if this is not part of my culture, why am I doing this and should I be doing this? And don't do it because you think it's trendy, because we don't think you look cute.
No, and we see you. That's not the whole intention behind this conversation, to be clear. I think it's the fact that El Día de los Muertos is coming up. It's the fact that, you know, I think with everything happening with the politics of Donald Trump and the hatred against Latinos being pushed in a specific way.
Right? And particularly an anti-Mexican sentiment.
Exactly. Anti-Mexican sentiment in particular, that there just needs to be more awareness within our community about how to have these conversations.
Latinas sin vergüenza. Creo en lo imposible. Que
la locura más cuerda es buscar cómo ser libre. Creo en lo imposible. Que de nuestras espaldas brotarán las alas que nos harán volar invencible. Creo en lo imposible. Que el cimbo silenciará el efecto de sus misiles. Creo en lo imposible. Creo que es posible hacer de este mundo un mundo sensible. Creo en nuestros sueños como punta de lanza, el arma perfecta para nivelar la balanza. Creo en las acciones cotidianas que te llenan de vida, te llenan de esperanza.
En lo pequeño radica la fuerza. Con tu cariño yo caminaré, imaginando rutinas bellas para dar vuelta al mundo al revés. Empezar por nuestra casa primero, romper con todo nuestro miedo, ser consecuente de cuerpo y de mente para alzar el vuelo por senderos nuevos.
Porque tu luz cotidiana enciende la sonrisa que sale por la mañana.
Creo en ti, porque veo tu fuerza inexplicable, esa justa dignidad inconmensurable.
Creo en ti, yo reafirmo que tu rabia proviene del dolor y tu lucha florece del amor.
Porque en ti me veo yo.
Con problemas y dilemas, con trabas, con vallas, con tropiezos y con penas. Creo en el cotidiano que hemos hecho a mano, tallado con el paso de lo que caminamos.
Nadie muestra su careta, sonrisas y moriquetas. Solo esconden la verdad, desarticulando la micropolítica de la vida personal. Creo en nuestros sueños, volando para el cielo. Creo en tus acciones más fuertes que balas, transformando nuestro barrio al final de la jornada. Con ideas que el dinero
ser los convencidos, ni a predicar a los que se sienten vencidos. Yo vine a compartir con quien haya entendido que la pelea empieza por el nido. Porque tu luz cotidiana enciende la sonrisa que sale por la mañana.
Creo en ti, porque veo tu fuerza inexplicable, esa puta dignidad inconmensurable.
Creo en ti, yo reafirmo que tu rabia proviene del dolor y tu lucha florece del amor.
Porque en ti me veo yo.
You are now tuned into the Latina Theory with Maria Isa and Adriana Herias.
And we are coming to a close on this fifth episode of the Latina Theory.
Yes.
But before we close out, I want to make sure to thank our wonderful, brilliant guest, Jessica. Thank you so much for coming on this podcast episode with us.
Yeah, girl. We appreciate it.
Thanks for having me. I'm really excited about what y'all are doing, and I know it's just going to get bigger and brighter.
And we're going to keep bringing you on, so just put us in.
She's a reoccurring guest.
Yeah, she's a reoccurring. She's like, you know, we say comadre because she's a madrina.
Hey, you bring the coffee, I will be there.
I'm here. Hey, we got you. We got you. Shout out to our sponsors of this episode, Yel Como. By way of Calito Brigante in Puerto Rico.
Right.
Yeah, so we're wrapping up with our highlights and events happening.
September 24th, we have the second annual Minneapolis Trans Summit. And make sure to tune in and check that out. It's going to be amazing. So again, that's going to be on September 24th.
And we want to highlight, like, as well, going into the 24th of September, going into the 26th of September, we have the Dear Gaza Black Party benefit, where all the funds go to the medical relief program and equipment that goes straight to the Gaza Strip. It's a $10 to $20 suggested donation. There's going to be a social hour, special performances by Villa Rosa, Guante, Lifted Minds, and Nazim, and DJ sets by DJ Boogie, and more artists that are going to be performing. There's short films curated by Mizna, dance, kids activities, poetry, art, food. Come just celebrate for a great cause and making sure that there's medical supplies in a horrible war that is unnecessary.
Mm-hmm. Very true. Also on the 26th and going into the 27th, there's a curandera named Pan Katsani coming to Minneapolis. The People's Movement Center, it's an organization that I'm part of on 41st in Chicago, is bringing Pan Katsani in partnership with Samuelito Rivera in the Indigenous Womb Wellness Series. People's Movement Center is a healing justice space that centers the work and movement building of queer, trans, people of color, and Indigenous populations. And so this series on the 26th and 27th is full right now for the womb wellness series. However, there are 15 women of color that will be learning these knowledges, anywhere from womb massage to essential oils for reproductive health, to looking at how things like the rebozo can be part of a way to bring about healing justice. And so what we are asking our gente, our community, to do is to actually donate to the cause, because the curandera Pan Katsani is offering this based on sliding scale.
And at the end of September as well, another event coming up, the Mujeres Poderosas Happy Hour, which I have been putting together every month, will be happening, to clarify.
Yes.
I got a little backed up, but I'm organizing. It's going to be at the end of September. More details coming soon. We'll be creating a Facebook invite. But, you know, this is a gathering for wonderful mujeres with a special focus on women of color. To come together, kick it, love on each other, and learn about the great work that everyone's doing. So awesome. That's happening at the end of September.
Yeah, and they're amazing. If you've never been, go. It's good connections, good drinks, good gente, you know.
And also, we're going to be throwing a party for our podcast, The Latina Theory. We're at our fifth episode. Thank you guys for tuning in. But we'll be throwing a party. Join us on our email list, latinatheory@gmail.com. Follow us on Twitter, SoundCloud, Instagram. We want you to give us some great ideas of what you'd like to see at our party. We're going to have food. We're going to have drinks. We're going to keep it real. And obviously, we're going to have musica, dancing, and ritmo. So stay tuned. Thank you for joining us today. And here is El Perdón by Nicky Jam and Enrique Iglesias to lead us off. Peace.
Dijeron que te está casando, tú no sabes lo que estoy sufriendo. Esto te lo tengo que decir.
Cuéntame, tu despedida para mí fue dura. Cena que te llevo a la luna y yo no supe hacerlo así.
Te estaba buscando.
Estoy sufriendo en la soledad.
celebración. Yo sigo insistiendo a pedir perdón. Lo único que importa es en tu corazón.
Te estaba buscando por la calle gritando. Esto me está matando. Oh no.
Te estaba buscando por las calles gritando. Como un loco tomando. Oh, oh, oh.
Es que yo sentí. Sin ti y tú sin mí, dime quién pueda ser feliz. Esto no me gusta, esto no me gusta.
Es que yo sin ti y tú sin mí, dime quién puede ser feliz. Esto no me gusta. Oh, yeah. Oh.
Dicen que uno no sabe lo que tiene hasta que lo pierde, pero vale la pena luchar por lo que uno quiere.
Quiero vivir así.
Nicky Jam, Enrique Iglesias.